is the Fan.
Returning shortly, Aaron Gleeman. Aaron Gleeman of The Athletic. At Aaron Gleeman via Twitter in studio. Now, there's some bitterness this morning, Aaron. It's the rivalry.
Yeah.
It's the third place game. Fantasy basketball dominated everybody's minds on a Tuesday morning.
Whether they liked it or not, they had to hear about it all season, yeah.
Well, how about that? I mean, the guy, much like his competitiveness in the league, he's nowhere to be found right now.
You think that's...
In the 651 Carpet Studio. He just gave up, much like he did during the LFL season.
Yeah, Nordo and I are matched up in the third place game for this league that we've talked about endlessly all season long, which we apologize for, but not really. And we were just comparing notes on the dilapidated state of our rosters where, for fantasy playoffs, you schedule it a week before the actual end of the season in the hopes that you're not getting tankathon shutdowns for everybody. But this year, and I guess this has been true in past years too, like so many teams, like I have Damian Lillard and like eight other Portland Trailblazers, and they just shut him down for no reason really. Like he's scoring 35 a game, he's healthy. So yeah. We're very much limping to the finish line. It's going to become a rivalry because, you know, we both need the $10 or whatever that we win for winning it.
But. Absolutely. How about the team that's not limping to the finish line, though, of the NBA season, Minnesota Timberwolves, housing that back-to-back. You got Cat with a big shot against the Dubs the other night. And then, of course, last night, it's the Eastern European kid and De'Aaron Fox trying to make it happen. And Mike Conley and Ant and Jade McDaniels with the bounce back game, and they handle it two straight for the Howl.
The McDaniels one was great because he was terrible the game before. I don't even know how much he played. He played like 10 minutes because he was in foul trouble, but he was great. I liked how early in the game they had him attack who was guarding him, where you don't see that much with McDaniels because he's basically stand and shoot type of guy, but I like that. I mean, it was a nice return for Cat, similar to the return to the studio for one Paul Allen. That's what they call a segue in the business.
I was moved during the Warriors game because there were some times where you just don't see the champs, you know, down Wiggins and maybe some push button to it. Like, you know what, go ahead and let us into the postseason and then we'll win the championship and then spend the next 3 months complaining about how everybody counted us out.
Yeah.
In like the strangest chip on the shoulder, you doubted us.
Yeah, you create your own bulletin board material by playing poorly.
It might have been one slappy from like an ancillary Phoenix newspaper, not even the Mercury or whatever, who was like, they're done. They just don't have it anymore. And like media relations guy showed it to Steph or somebody. Well, now all of a sudden the world's against us.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so ridiculous.
Yeah. Nobody thinks we can do it. Well, yeah, you guys are like below 500.
Yeah.
Like, okay. But I mean, I remember what was the second Houston Rockets championship team?
Yeah.
Where they added Drexler to Olajuwon.
Yeah. And Sam Cassell and Vernon Maxwell.
And Robert Horry and all those guys. But they were 500-ish. And I think they got in as like the six or the seven seed. And I remember whether it was Tomjanovich or somebody at the beginning of the playoffs being like, we don't care. They don't want to play us, the two seed or whatever, you know, to play the seven because we're not a normal seven.
Yeah.
And that is going to be true. Like if the Warriors do get like the seven seed or the six, I mean, they still could get the six seed.
Yeah.
If you're like Sacramento at number three,
Yeah, I ain't tripping on Sacramento.
They don't want to play the Warriors.
I see what you're saying.
Like, no matter how mediocre the Warriors look for how long, and especially on the road, they've been terrible all season, and the Wolves just beat them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if you gave truth serum to all the playoff teams and said, would you rather play the Wolves or the Warriors in the first round, they'd probably say the Warriors. But that's what, when you get championship cred, that lingers longer than your actual championship abilities.
I like how you laid that out, because it's like Warriors, say they win a play-in, say they're the six or whatever. Well, this isn't your normal six, your normal seven, your normal eight. Because in the NHL, that's been said all season about the Colorado Avalanche, who have been languishing a little bit. What pass McKinnon, what do you like about their depth?
I always love that one.
Yeah. That is the 6, 7, or 8 that you really don't want to see in the first round. I think it's a good parallel.
They still have Patrick Waugh.
But, yes.
He's the only Colorado Avalanche.
Plays with Joe Sakic.
Okay, Joe Sakic I know too,
And not Mario, but Claude Lemieux.
Yeah, Claude Lemieux.
I always love that one.
Nevertheless, there were moments during that Warriors game when it was Conley, Ant, Gobert, Cat, and McDaniels. Okay, so it was those five. Or it was Anderson and not McDaniels. And with Conley leading that thing, man, I mean, it's organized.
Right.
And now they were playing with some ferocity. And you know, I mean, the Dubs, they're the champs. You know, when Golden State got pissed off because, like, Draymond Green shot an air ball three-pointer and then he threw one out of bounds, and they're like, come on, Kurecek's like, come on, let's play. So they started playing hard. And the Wolves actually for a little while kind of withstood the challenge, and it was Gobert dominating a smaller team on the boards, and then a bunch of Dubs having to run in to get the rebound. They couldn't get it over Stifle. He'd then kick it out. You got two guys wide open. And then Conley would hustle down.
That's what I was going to say.
Like okay, but then he'd stop.
I thought Conley, especially, I thought he's pretty good defensively, and then his rebounding, which he's the smallest guy on the court.
It's underrated.
But compared to early in the season, when Finch was like post game a lot of times just begging the guards to rebound.
Third round league freak next year.
Conley got his rebounding strength.
100%. Yeah.
But it is a big change. Like they're not as good at rebounding as you would think.
Yeah.
You know, Twin Towers wise. We'll see if that improves.
We don't have any Drew Eubanks.
Yeah. Who's now he's out. The Portland. Here's my mistake. And you mentioned this.
No, I'm just mentioning players. So continue on Conley and his rebounding.
Draft day.
Al Charlemagne. Anyway, go ahead.
I did my draft and everyone in the league chat, like on text, said, why do you have all Orlando Magic, Portland Trail Blazers, and Detroit Pistons?
Yeah,
and I looked at my roster and I thought, yeah, that's not going to go that well. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Yeah, that's why I'm languishing.
I would rather get Sacramento over Memphis in the postseason.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah. I mean, But that's the opposite of the championship cred, right? It's the opposite, which is Sacramento has to prove it before people will believe it. Not that Memphis has made some big playoff run, but they've at least been a good team now for several years.
Yeah.
And they beat the Wolves, obviously, last year in the playoffs. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, first of all, that would be we saw last night, that'd be a very fun series.
Yes.
Sacramento Wolves.
Yeah. They've had terrific games this year, period.
And I just think there's a little history there going back to the, you know, early 2000s, which, you know, the Garnett Weber days. I don't know. I mean, I feel like one of those teams, if you get a Sacramento Minnesota 3-6, one of them has to win the series,
Be sweet.
I mean, somebody's going to the second round unless the world just ends or something like that.
Finch after a game is like, if you think Vlade Divac, Stinkakovich, and Bibby are going to roll in to save the series, it ain't going to happen. Doug Christie.
Yeah.
Right. And but see, the potential of an MB3 is here with Edwards and Stifle, the way he's playing defensively. His defense, his weak side defense the last couple of games has been unbelievable, changing shots. But so obviously the knees and everything have a lot to do with that. So then you got Cat, McDaniels, and Conley. Just if you can morph two of those into an MV to be the three,
right.
Might be Cat. He just seems to be a little wonky at this stage, but that's to be expected. And Sacramento, it's like Fox, Sabonis. I ain't tripping on Kevin Herter. So Herter's been hot of late.
I mean, he's a great shooter.
Yes,
but
he's been hot of late, and he's actually been really good against us this year.
Yeah.
But then the Iowa rookie, Keegan Murray. I mean, he, you know, his three-point shooting is, it's a thing.
They have a ton of shooters.
Yes.
I don't know that they have, other than Fox and Sabonis.
Yeah. Well, you know who gets us is Trey Lyles. It's like Trey Lyles or Malik Monk one game, and then you shut him down, and now it's this Trey Lyles thing.
They do a lot of shooters. But I thought it was also interesting to, well, two things. One, Finch talked post-game yesterday, I guess, last night, about how not having to hide a guard on one of the team's non-scorers.
Wow.
He didn't mention D'Lo's name, obviously, but he was talking about D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can have Conley, I'm not saying he's all NBA defense or anything, but he can compete and he can stay in front of somebody. And that allows them to do some other things like put Gobert on the big of their choosing instead of, you know, if you want him to stay by the hoop, you can choose that matchup. If you want him to chase outside, you can choose that matchup. And they just have a lot more flexibility because what you're not doing is immediately saying, who can we hide Russell on because you have Conley. And I think that's an underrated part of the trade.
Go ahead.
But I also like they have six guys now that I think you can trust. And I'll throw, you know, Prince in there, too, when healthy. I mean, and
Prince dunked on somebody again last night.
Prince does funny stuff, which is like he's mostly just a catch and shoot 3-and-D guy.
Yes.
But then once in a while when the shot clock's low or like it's a ragged lineup out there in the second half, they'll just kick it to him and he'll just be like, all right, here we go.
Right.
Like I'll just pretend I'm 18 again and try to take you to the hoop. And honestly, he's not that bad at it.
Well, he's doing one of three things. He's either spot up shooter guy for a three. He's dunking on you, or he's throwing the ball to a place nobody is within 10 feet.
Well, that's the thing. When you're asking a guy to, you know, initiate some offense when he's mostly a catch and shoot guy, it can get a little, like you said, wonky. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think obviously they're coming off, what, it's four in a row. Now they've won. You know, people are optimistic again.
Yep.
The other thing is, like, they got through the tough part of the schedule. If you look at the remaining schedule, it's, you know, Portland. I think there's an Orlando in there.
Yeah.
You get Phoenix, but it's unclear if Durant's going to be back for that. Like, there is a chance for them to finish on a pretty high note. And I honestly think avoiding the play-in is now sort of, you know, a 50-50 at worst.
Twins talk with the tech
on the Fan.
Welcome back, 9 to noon, quite briefly. Periodically on the show, you hear what is called a covenant cleanup. A covenant cleanup currently provided by... A covenant cleanup. We either screw up or at some points on a regular basis... Need to correct ourselves. It may be known as Gerald to Sergio Romo, to the rest of the world, including nine text messages to the Bradshaw and Bryant KFAN inbox. It is called a pitchback. Currently on sale at most sporting goods retailers for roughly $150.
But that's not a cleanup because we identified the name of an apparatus given by a human being. The covenant cleanup would be as if we called it pitch forward. Or if we called it hurlback. Well, then we made a mistake.
Yeah, this is additional information, not correcting previous.
We gained insight.
Correct.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point. So cancel that covenant cleanup provided by.
It's a pitchback. Well, thanks for.
We learned something today.
Yeah, it was revelatory. What we were talking about, Sergio Romo with the Giants and the, you know, get to retire Giant, all that. I hearkened to the pandemic when he was at his place in Edina or a suburb of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis. And, you know, Morse hooked us up and he actually like had him on the show three straight pandemic weeks for like when we weren't sweating straddle. I think they were like 24 minute interviews. And they were so eclectic and quirky and weird.
The beauty of him is you just sort of put a quarter in him.
That's it.
And watch him go.
Well, yeah. Like, The first
one question will be 20 minutes.
The first was pandemic related, you know, no season, whatever. Families in Northern California. I'm here at my place. What are you doing? Well, all I do is go into my driveway and play catch with Gerald. Well, I'm like, well, who's Gerald? Yeah. It was the pitchback bit. Yeah. And then I'm like, is Gerald your friend? And he bit.
Yeah.
Do you love Gerald?
No, that he'll play like because that year we only did Zoom interviews with everybody.
Yeah.
At Target Field, and so we talked to him quite a bit.
Yeah.
And there were multiple times when we'd be like 34 minutes in to just the five beat writers just talking to him, and he's just talking about insane, funny things. And Dustin Morris, their communications czar, would be like, what is this? Like, are we done? Can we stop? And Romo's like, I don't know. We're having fun. Like,
I had a moment like that most recently at the Combine with Vikings defensive coordinator Brian Flores. Spearfish, Jeff Carley, I can't remember who brought him over, but it was the allotted time was, I think, 12 to 15 minutes or something. And Gabe Henderson and I sat back. I don't think I looked at my questions for 15 minutes. I mean, we just went back and forth and Tomlin and blitzing and press man and just and him opening up about, you know, being a head coach and I want to be a head coach and it just a bunch of different type. And it went like 24 minutes. And then, you know, when it's done, media relations people like Dustin Morris or whomever were like, geez, we thought you were going to keep him the full hour. But sometimes it just becomes. It's not often either, but, you know, I'm certainly not saying Flores is as quirky, eclectic, or wide open as Sergio Romo. But when you get those insiders to just chat, man, and they're relaxed, we deal with the other side of it so frequently where they want nothing to do with any microphone or any techie that when they start to open up and it's, like, real and natural and stuff, I just love it, man.
No, I mean, Romo was like our Andrew Baggerly, who's the Athletics Giants writer and has been covering Romo his whole career, basically, wrote a great ode to him and sort of talked about that, how unique he is and how he really just seems like a guy who won the Major League Lottery and is just thrilled to be there. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's one thing I've learned the last few years, you know, trying to play the role of reporter as much as I can is when you're, like, 3-4 minutes into a little one-on-one or even a group interview and you realize, oh, this guy's just answering stuff. Like, this guy's just willing to talk. It is fun to just be like, all right, well, here's 10 other things we could talk about.
It's fantastic.
And it is rare, like you said, because I think athletes, and this is kind of how they have to be in a lot of cases, but athletes have become so polished in a lot of spots.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Everything's, oh, I'm going to do 10 minutes here and 9 minutes here. And so when you find yourself in the middle of something and you realize, like, we've strayed from the topic here, but it's almost better that we did that.
Yes.
Those are the best. And Tony Romo, Sergio Romo is the greatest example of that ever because he can break down, you know, the choice to go with a fastball to Miguel Cabrera that you were talking about, but he can also just talk about his friend Gerald for 20 minutes.
And Kevin O'Connell, coach of the Minnesota Vikings, is very much like this. And I hope it never changes. You can ask him one question. The average amount of time he spends answering any question is like a minute, 32 seconds. And off the question, it's almost a because he can't control himself with his honesty and his sharing, and not in a bad way, just a happy-go-lucky, free-spirited, almost childlike way. It builds talkers off of it.
Right.
And Romo's the same way. Sergio's the same way.
I always like Belichick and Popovich are this way where 95% of their answers will be like one line.
Yeah.
They'll just be like, no, that's not how we're going to do it.
Yeah, tips. Like,
Thibodeau. He's the same way. But one out of 20 or once a day or maybe even once a month, they will talk about some play or some play call or some player on the other team for 45 minutes. And you realize like, oh, okay, he's capable of this. We're just not able to get it out of him. On a regular basis.
Twin season opener in a week and small change. It's at Target Field, 3:10 in the afternoon against the champs. We hook the Houston Astros. And let's begin here. Are you a fan of the pitch clock?
Yes.
Why?
It's, I don't think it eliminates anything that anyone actually enjoyed.
Yep. Okay, off that, because you were at Fort Myers and you're watching a ton of games. Are you noticing, like, pitchers being like, oh, shoot, I better hurry?
Yes. But
you know what I'm saying?
Like, the first week or two, yes. By the third, fourth, and now fifth, sixth week, far fewer violations, far less hurried. And even I talked to a bunch of pitchers about it because I kind of expected the pitchers on the Twins, especially some of the veteran guys, to be like, I hate this. It's ruining, you know, whatever. And I was pleasantly surprised that, at least publicly, when we would ask them, you know, after they'd come out of a game or whatever, guys like Sonny Gray are like, well, it's going to take some getting used to. There's going to be a spot here or a spot there where I probably in the moment think this stinks.
Yeah.
But it's better overall for the game. And I think that, to me, is almost undeniable. Like, it's going to change the pace of the game. And, you know, I've heard people go like, well, what happens if it's the bottom of the ninth and it decides, you know, they call a pitch clock violation on the batter or the pitcher and it decides the game. And it's like, well, it's within everyone's control.
Yep.
Like, stay in the box and be ready. And I know there's some, you know, nightmare scenario where it's game seven of the World Series and it gets decided by that. But at that point, you've had 7 months to get used to this.
Well, what happens if a player fakes that a bug got in his eye?
Right.
You know, well, you there's definitely going to be these outliers. Something got in my eye.
There's going to be outlier cases, but here's the other thing. Yes, if it's, you know, game seven, the World Series, 3-2 count, bases loaded, all that. But the majority of these are just going to be, okay, the count is 1-1 instead of, you know, 0-1 or whatever. Like, we can all live. Like, it's okay. Balls and strikes are not the end of the world either way. And so, yeah, I think you're going to see minimally 20 minutes shaved off the average game time, maybe closer to 30 minutes.
Right.
I think by May or June.
Yeah.
It's going to be out of mind. Like, you're going to, there's going to be so few violations. Like, you might see one every couple of games or something like that.
So Red Sox, Yankees, Sunday night baseball, so that'll only will be probably end at 9:15 as opposed to 10.
That'll be only 5 hours instead of 5.5 hours. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good. I think it eliminates dead air, basically. It eliminates guys Velcroing and un-Velcroing their batting gloves. It eliminates a pitcher, you know, taking the rosin and just walking in circles around the mound, which we've baseball fans tend to make everything seem it's the poetry of baseball. It's the no, that's not it. Yeah, yes, it's great that there's no clock in baseball.
Yeah,
but this is needed because compared to even 10 or 20 years ago, go watch a game from like the 90s, even, which is not even that long ago.
Yeah,
and guys are staying in the box. Guys are pitching relatively fast. This became an issue because over the last 10 years, pitchers and hitters are both guilty of this, but they drew this thing out so much that there had to be kind of a pushback on
it. The poetry of baseball is the beautiful day or night, the slow pace of the game. Some guys are running off the field after the third out. Some are, you know, cajoling with fans jokingly or walking back in. Bump, bump, bump.
Yeah, sue the organist at Target Field.
Bump, bump. Yeah, I mean, it's the poetry.
That's all still there. It's just you don't have to watch a guy for 34 seconds in between pitch. It's only going to be 16 seconds.
Al Hrabowski, the mad Hungarian. Yeah. He'd have no chance with the pitch clock.
Well, there's definitely some guys who are going to have to make adjustments. But here's, I mean,
Louis Tiant's twirl takes 22 seconds in its own right.
You think that.
Hideo Nomo.
But here's the thing. You think that because in their era, they were the slowest working pitchers. But the slowest working pitchers in like the 60s and 70s would be the fastest working pitchers today. And that's why the pitch clock is needed.
Yeah.
The pitch clock wasn't needed for Al Hrabowski or for whoever. Because even at their slowest in the 80s and the 70s and whatever, there was still a good pace to it. Now things have just, I mean, there's a clip, if people, I forget who the pitcher was, but people on one of the first days of the pitch clock this spring, there was a 3-pitch strikeout from a Yankees pitcher in a spring training game. All three, from start to finish, the entire strikeout lasted less time than one pitch thrown by Baez, who's a Dodgers reliever in the playoffs, because that one pitch, the guy gets the ball back. Mm. He stands off the mound. I don't know. I think there's always going to be people complain, especially with baseball. Like I said, people find fault, and you can't strip away anything from baseball. It's what makes it great. But to me, it's you're removing dead air, and you're making it 2.5 hours instead of 3 hours. Yep. That's still plenty of time to be at the ballpark.
Techie got to be on his toes.
Yeah, that's true.
You got to make sure the neck fan. Well, see, this helps.
Yeah, it doesn't run out of battery as easily.
The batteries with the neck fan are going to last more games because of time being shaved off per game.
Less time to tweet in game, but that's probably a good thing also.
I don't know. I like gravy training. Excuse me. I like following your tweets during games.
If I had a deadline, like for instance, the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press beat writers, they're in favor of this because now they get a little bit more time between deadline, and the players are in favor too. So I don't know. I think it'll be good.
Well, the change from 19 divisional games to 13 and including everybody, I mean, casual, low-key baseball guy like me, I'm into that. I mean, the opportunity to see everybody, if only on TV, I think is pretty cool, man. What about you?
I like that, too. I mean, I think Red Sox-Yankees going from 19 to 13 matchups, maybe there's some fans of those teams who go, that stinks. We want to have as many of those as we can.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, as somebody who's gone to every Twins home game for 4 years now, there's enough Twins Royals. There's enough Twins Tigers.
Yeah.
And even Twins Guardians.
Would you say the same thing if Lo Kane was roaming center field?
Yeah, I mean, there's just, I think it is a disadvantage somewhat to teams in the AL Central because the AL Central is typically the worst division in baseball. So you're getting fewer games against AL Central opponents. You can't beat up on the Royals and the Tigers as much. Yeah. Those are being turned into just games against all National League teams. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe a little bit tougher of a schedule. But ultimately, you just have to beat the teams in your division to win the division. So it doesn't change that much. I think that's another change that, in general, is good. I think the more balanced the schedule is, the more, the closer to fair you're going to get in terms of wild card spots, because it was not fair to have the Yankees play 19 games apiece against a much tougher division and the Twins play 19 against the weakest division and have the East and the Central competing for the same wild card spots.
And if there's anybody in any sport to complain about fair,
it's the Yankees.
I first and foremost think about the New York Yankees.
When will they catch a break, these poor Yankees?
I mean, it's like, who's available at the trade deadline?
Maybe I could have used the Blue Jays as the example for the
AL. You know what I mean, though. Jose Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
100 RBI or more.
Yeah, that was one of my predictions.
If I made 100 the cut, I think the under would be 2-1 favored, but not a big favor, right? But we'd be smashing the over, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I looked this up because I wasn't even sure. 100 is sort of the benchmark for RBIs, obviously. But only in the last 10 seasons, there's only been two Twins who have had 100 RBIs in a season. Nelson Cruz did it and Eddie Rosario did it, and they both did it in 2019. They had 108 and 109 in 2019. That's the only time a Twins hitter in the last decade has reached 100 RBI. So I thought, all right, well, I mean, I think Miranda is going to have a lot of RBI. I think he's going to bat third, fourth, fifth in this lineup, which is a traditional RBI spot.
Yeah.
I think they like to bat Correa second, which is not a traditional RBI spot, but you're seeing more and more teams bat their best all-around hitter number two instead of number three or number four because it gets them more plate appearances and you don't care about who's getting the RBIs. You're caring about run scoring for the team.
Yeah.
I mean, Miranda has looked fantastic all spring. He looked great after the slow start last year as a rookie. I think his skill set in terms of he doesn't draw a lot of walks. He puts the ball in play. He has power to all fields. I think he's going to hit homers, but also he's going to hit a lot of doubles. I think he has a real chance to be, you know, even if he hits 280 with 25 homers, I think he's going to have a ton of guys on base for him, and I think he's going to be the third guy in the last decade to have 100 RBI for the Twins.
Let's skate on over to the NHL. Let's skate on over to the bullpen. Like, best, these names.
Okay.
Joaquin Benoit.
Yeah.
Arthur Rhodes.
Okay.
Tony Watson.
Uh-huh.
You think Griffin Jacks has gotten into these... The setup lineup with the likes of Joaquin Benoit, Tony Watson, and Arthur Rhodes.
Whenever we do this and you name some random reliever from Tony, I just hope someone in his family's listening and tells him, hey, Joaquin, you got mentioned on a Minnesota radio show today.
Tony pitched 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. Tony Watson.
Yeah.
I think Griffin Jacks is going to have a breakout year. He was very good last year, but I think watching him this spring and watching last season, the level his just raw stuff and velocity and movement jumped from being kind of a marginal starter prospect who got knocked around 2 years ago as a rookie to becoming a reliable setup guy last year, throwing 95 instead of 92 with a great slider. He's working on a cutter this spring. I think, you know, he's not a household name, and being a setup man, he may never be a household name, but I think he's going to emerge to me as their most trusted non-Duran reliever because, you know, Johan Duran is on another level, but I think Griffin Jacks is going to be, he would probably be, if not my breakout pick, one of two or three breakout picks.
So Johan Duran.
Yes.
A proven closer at this point, correct?
I mean, he hasn't closed, but he's a proven amazing reliever.
Yeah.
The question is, will they keep using him as sort of a fire, like a 60s or 70s style fireman?
So you're saying I misread the sentence in the Athletic story.
You just didn't read the three paragraphs after the sentence.
I didn't. No. I did about Griffin Jacks.
Yeah, well, that was only one paragraph.
Yeah. Wait,
I know your attention span, PA.
Wait till we get a load of the reinforced rotation.
You should go to, like, predictions, like, 13 through 16. Those are only a sentence long. So that might be more your speed.
Damn it.
I think Duran is clearly their best reliever. He's clearly one of the best, I would say, five relievers in all of baseball.
Whoa.
The question with him is, can they get more value using him in tie games or using him, you know, with two guys on in the eighth inning versus holding him back strictly for ninth inning save situations?
Mm-hmm.
And it's more and more teams have gone away from the traditional, you know, 90s style Dennis Eckerle one inning closer, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I think the Twins would like to move him around like they did last year and kind of put him in game-changing high-leverage spots without worrying about who's getting a save.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's just going to be real tempting at some point, especially if a couple other guys like Jorge Lopez or Emilio Pagan struggle again in the bullpen. It's just going to become very tempting to just say, you know what, let's stop screwing around with this. We'll just have him pitch the ninth when we get a lead. And if that happens, I think he could, you know, get 35, 40 saves, something like that. But they need him. They need Jorge Lopez to be the guy they traded for instead of the shaky guy they got after the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. I think Griffin Jacks is going to be big for the bullpen. I think Giovanni Moran is a lefty I like a lot.
What about Emilio Pagan, though?
Emilio Pagan, I'm not so sure about.
I read your story,
yeah,
with all due respect, I will follow it closer, and I should have been following him more closely.
You don't have to be.
I didn't think he was on the team. And then when I read he was on the team, I was like, why is he on the team?
Well, that is a question I've fielded all offseason. I don't have a great answer for that other than they continue to believe that from a raw stuff standpoint, from fastball velocity, off-speed pitch movement, strikeout rate, that he's better than he looked last season.
Transitioning is tough.
I'm of the belief that this is like his fourth team that's kind of taken that stance, and they've all mostly been wrong.
Right.
Like, you watch him, and when he's good, he's very good.
Was he a throw-in in the Paddock bit?
Sort of. It was, they needed a reliever to replace Taylor Rogers, and they got Pagan and put him into a high-leverage spot. And he was okay early on and then really just blew up midseason. So, yeah, I mean, I also was sort of surprised that he was brought back. I mean, he's making $3.5 million, so the price is not, huge for a setup man. But
that's before taxes.
The question I have with him and some of the other depth veterans that they have is how long, like if he goes through another stretch like he did in June and July last year where he was really struggling and giving up game-changing home runs, how committed are they to sticking with him versus turning things over to younger guys and just chalking this up as a mistake? I mean, they weren't willing to do that after one poor season. Will they be willing to do that after one poor season and 2 months or 3 months? And I think that could be huge. They will tell you that they think Emilio Pagan is just better than he looked last year and can be a, seventh, eighth inning quality setup reliever. I'm very skeptical. If they're right about that, then their bullpen has a chance to be very, very good, though.
Joey Gallo.
Mm-hmm.
Possible to get the average around 225. I mean, is it
they would
possible?
Love that.
Just 225.
Yeah, it doesn't seem
enough
like it's...
Enough of this Mark Belanger, Mendoza line stuff.
I will say that, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but batting average has, become a little outdated as a way to evaluate hitters. Obviously, there are some guys who hit singles and some guys who hit homers, and batting average treats all those the same. So it's unfair to a guy like Gallo, who will hit 30, 40 homers in a good year.
Yep.
To say, well, what's his batting average? Well, you trade batting average for homers. But he's at such an extreme end of the low batting average scale. He is the only guy in Major League history who has struck out in a higher percentage of his plate appearances than Miguel Sano. And it is kind of cruel to be like Twins fans who really came to be frustrated by Miguel Sano. They finally part ways with Miguel Sano. And they sign literally the only guy who has a higher strikeout rate than Miguel Sano. But I will say this about Gallo compared to Miguel Sano. Gallo is a two-time Gold Glove winning outfielder.
Yeah.
Gallo is a good base runner with decent speed. I think those are two things that Miguel Sano could never do.
Yeah.
And so if Gallo can hit, they would love if Gallo hit 225, because if he's hitting 225,
you're being serious,
with 30 homers and 75 walks and gold glove defense,
strikeouts.
By the way, if he hits 225, he'll make the All-Star team.
Yeah.
He has made the All-Star team hitting 225 before. He's a two-time All-Star.
That's crazy.
I know there are people who will never think that makes any sense. I get it. I totally get it. But no one cares, relatively speaking, in major league front offices about batting average. They care about on-base percentage, slugging percentage, which batting average is part of. But, I don't know. Gallo hit 160 last year, which is why he was available on a 1-year deal. If he hits 160 again, he's not going to be on the team at the All-Star break, let alone be an All-Star. But, yeah, it sounds crazy to some people, but they would love for him to hit 225.
My brother, good seeing you. I'll see you next week as you are a you're a gentleman, a scholar, and a connoisseur of quality Manischewitz, but you're also an elite baseball mind. For all of that, we thoroughly enjoy your company.
See you, Pia.
It's Aaron Gleeman, at Aaron Gleeman via Twitter. And he writes about the Twins and baseball for The Athletic and TheAthletic.com. A new quickie called Five and Fly. Five and Fly. Generally, when this segment begins, we'll have about 5 minutes to go on the radio show before the con puts the wrap on the show. So five and a fly. Some things that maybe you missed at 9 to noon today, some news topics that have popped up during the course of the conversation, or sound and quotes and stuff like that from earlier in the show. And here's the con.
From earlier in the show, Gophers head coach, Gopher men's hockey coach Bob Motzko, despite the conversation or amidst the conversation of the Frozen Four and all the excitement about maroon and gold, you asked him, hey, you know, are you seeing maybe the tides turn a bit in terms of the philosophy of these highly touted, talented kids bringing into some programs versus the 23, 24, some of the older age and experience that goes along with some hockey programs?
I'm telling you, it's going to be you called it the balancing act. That's what the key is for all of us, is to have that balancing act of young talent and older players that can lead the way. And it's very difficult without the older player, though. Like, you know, we're Michigan, Minnesota, we're going to be able to attract young, great talent and love it when they come in. But if they're here for, you know, it's the older guys that are here that are kind of paving the way, that kind of set a foundation inside that room. And that balance acts hard. I'm just there. And you don't know, like, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season for next year. I just got to sit back and then we got to react to it. But hey, we got a great university, great hockey program, and we'll find our path forward.
Brodzinski, Nevers, and Nelson would be three names to mention there. And you can listen to the full interview, KFAN.com, 9 to noon on demand. What else?
Well, just from a pure jubilation standpoint, Pat Micheletti from Saturday as the Golden Gophers advance to the Frozen Four.
Leadership, Lacombe, Faber, Johnson, Nelson, Brodzinski, helping out those younger kids, developing them. Here's how we're going to do it all year long. Follow our lead. Got to remember how young that freshman group is up front and in the back end. It's unbelievable.
Cloud Nine drives up to Fargo, pays his own way. He just wanted to be part of that, and he was.
Micheletti is on the mural at the Mooch. The Snuggerud and Cooley and Nyes. I mean, if they're as good, historically speaking, as everybody says they are, then Micheletti's spot on that mural may be in question. You can podcast that interview, started at about 9:15 at KFAN.com. It is Love Covenant on Demand. Anything else?
That's it for a five and fly, wrapping up 9 to noon on a Tuesday.
Yeah, the Wild got the money versus the Kraken last night. And who do we next play? We are
at Colorado tomorrow.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I better get my mind right. At Colorado tomorrow night. And the Timberwolves, what I was thinking of, they're at Phoenix before they hook the Lakers.
Kevin Durant expected to return.
Yep. And the Wolves beat Golden State Sunday, came back and beat Sacramento last night. So it's all good in the neighborhood. Wintersville sounds better in FM. I'm Paul Allen. Thank you for listening. Here comes Norda with a wrap on the show.
Ahem. 9 to noon, we're setting the foundation for odd topics and weird conversations. To those that stick around for the entire duration, hey, props to you and the mental occupation, manifestation of various sports takes. Usually a clear path to the points we make. Other times, it's verbally stepping on rakes. Opinions to be treated like urinal cakes. But, hey, that's up to the ear of the beholder. As if Matt Boldy could be any more bolder. The demise of the flower. Thoughts getting colder. No wilting. Ramping up as he gets older. Now tomorrow, big battle for the how. KD coming back, producing many a scowl. If we lose with HOF drawing a late foul, will the crazed bandwagon throw in the towel?
Excuse me while I whip this out.
Podcast today's Paul Allen Show, or listen back to previous show and interviews by going to the iHeartRadio app or KFAN.com.